Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, one and all, and welcome to Book Off, the literary podcast with a difference. I'm Joe Haddo, and it's wonderful to be back for Series 12. Yes, Series 12 of our little podcast. Thanks for bearing with us, and we hope we've been worth the wait. The bell and the horn are back, and that's not a euphemism or indeed a description of my two guests. And speaking of guests, today I'm joined by two brilliant writers who'll be going head-to-head in a war of the words a little later on, but hopefully they'll remain friends. My first guest studied English at the University of York, then took an MA in creative writing at the University of East Anglia. She loves a university. It was there she began work on her first novel, Eve Green, which won the Whitbread First Novel Award and the Betty Trask Prize. Since then, she's written seven novels, whilst also trying her hand at being a cheesemonger and a warden for an archaeological excavation. Say that when you haven't had some water. Here to tell us about her new novel, The Night in Question, it's Susan Fletcher. Hello.
Hello. It's lovely
to have you here.
Well, it's lovely to be here with you both. Thank you.
Thank you. And my second guest was raised in West Yorkshire, a place I know and love very well, which inspires the setting of her debut novel. She's from a millworking family, but is the first of a generation born after they closed, went to university. We're all university lovers in this room, and built a career in the corporate world. In 2020, she left that old world behind and began to write. And she's here to tell the tale because her debut novel, The List of Suspicious Things, is just out. Jenny Godfrey, welcome and happy publication day.
Yay. Thank you so much. I mean, what a gift to be here on launch day.
It's wonderful to have you. I'm actually amazed we got you.
I know. They wanted to keep me busy so that I couldn't sit there thinking.
They thought, give her an hour with Joe Haddo. We'll see he'll yeah, just wang
exactly.
on and, you know, yeah, yeah. Well, it's lovely to have you both here. Now, I was going to do the introductions, but you've been out there having coffee
chatting away.
You're old friends now, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We really are. And we'd already read each other's books.
Yep, read each other's books. And the thing about social media now, of course, is that you feel you know people before you actually meet them.
That's so very true.
Yeah, it did feel like meeting an old friend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's
fine.
That's when that's the good part of social media.
Yes, right? Yes, that's right.
When you do actually meet a fellow author or a social mediaer, and you're like, oh yeah, no, we do get on in real life as well. It's quite nice, actually.
Isn't it? And especially as normally as writers, we're sort of sat at home alone in our pyjamas.
Yep.
And Twitter is definitely an outlet for, you know, kind of meeting other authors all over the country. In fact, all over the world.
Yeah, it is. It's the community aspect of it that works so well. Yeah.
I'm always glad of a sort of positive social media story, actually.
Yeah.
So this is a good start.
Yeah.
So the introductions have been done. You don't really need me at all. You've read each other's books, so you can just sort of talk to each other about it. I'll just sit in the corner and listen on. But over the next 30 minutes, we are going to talk about your two brilliant novels. We're going to get a sense of what you've been reading and enjoying recently. Perhaps a shout out to some fellow authors or new books that are publishing, or maybe you've picked up something old recently. We'll talk about that. And then, of course, we'll do the book off, where each of you gets 3 minutes. Jenny's face, my goodness. 3 minutes. Don't be scared. To tell us about a book that you love, that you think everyone should read, and perhaps they haven't. But we'll get to that later. I think both of your books share themes of community, of connection, curiosity. I think they explore what it means to be human, and I loved both of them, and I think it's brilliant that you're both here because we can talk about these themes that run sort of in both of the novels. Let's talk about the knight in question, if we may, Susan.
Yes.
So, like so many stories, this book came out of lockdown, but I want to raise this specifically because it wasn't in a sort of I wrote a book in lockdown because I had lots of time way. It's more than that. Because the news and the situation actually influenced it, didn't it?
It did. Lockdown was announced. I was living on my own at that point in a first floor flat. And like all of us, I was very worried. I got very anxious. I got anxious about my loved ones, my parents. And my first thought was, right, how am I going to manage this for myself? And I turned to reading and writing. And I started writing about a character who I just thought would be wonderful company. First and foremost, I wanted somebody who I could spend my days with, who I would I'd enjoy waking up and going and being with her. So Florence Butterfield came into being. She's 87, she's a wheelchair user, she's cheerful, she's optimistic, she's humorous, she's the kind of person who would move a snail away from a pathway so no one trod on it, or, you know, greet a blackbird or something like that. So she was created, but she was created as an 87-year-old in response to the news, as you allude to, because, as I'm sure you remember, those awful evening reports as how many people had died within 28 days of testing positive for COVID. They were daily, and the care home statistics were reported separately. And that really upset me. I didn't understand why that was being done. And the inference seemed to be that these deaths were somehow less of a tragedy.
Yeah.
And
just hearing you talk about it brings
it upsets me even now thinking about that. Yeah. And I thought about the people that I had loved who'd been in care homes at that point. They were no longer in care homes, they died. But I thought of all the people out there who not only are in care homes but had loved ones in care homes who couldn't visit them. Mm. And of course, COVID was it was rife and certainly locally to us. So I felt very upset at this idea that that there was some kind of that it was less of a tragedy. Yeah. So in comes Florrie, 87, and I just wanted to show this somebody who is as alive and vibrant and wonderful as they ever were. And this idea that, yes, we might be getting older, but we're no less of who we were. The person we were at 20 is still us now. The person who was 10 is still us now. And I mean, I'm a sucker for a metaphor, but I remember writing that. Do you remember there's a tree somewhere in the UK where a bicycle was set against it in the First World War and left, and the tree just absorbed this bicycle, and it's now like 3 feet up in the air because the tree has continued to grow.
Wow.
I'm going to look back and wonder why I'm telling you about trees and bicycles, but I feel that that's a good metaphor for the 10-year-old us is still in us.
Do you know how many people are Googling tree?
I want to Google it myself now.
Like in a tree, World War I. Well, that's fascinating.
We all have lots of bicycles in us as we grow, maybe. I don't know. But anyway, Florrie, I just wanted to show the vibrancy and humour and vitalness of her despite being 87.
Oh, I love. I mean, I was going to love Florrie anyway because that was my Nana's name.
Oh.
And you don't get, I don't know many other Florries actually. So it was already onto a winner. And then obviously you meet her and you can't help. She's a wonderful character.
I'm glad.
Could you just tell us, you've already mentioned her, but tell us a little bit more about her and just set up the story for us.
Certainly. So, the book, really, there's two things happening in the book. The first thing is Florrie, 87, she's recently lost part of her leg. She is now in a care home, assisted living. And whilst there, quite early on, an incident happens that everyone puts down to an accident of sorts. But Florrie is suspicious. She thinks something else has been going on. And so at first glance, what this book is Florrie investigating what she believes is attempted murder. Mm. So that's the contemporary top story, if you like. But actually underneath it, there's something else going on, which is I wanted this to be a story of a woman's life.
Yeah.
So it is Florrie's life from preconception up to where she is now aged 87. And I wanted her story to be just rich and full and exciting, but also like any human life, it has its mistakes, its regrets, its sorrows, particularly when it comes to romantic love. I wanted to talk about the six men that she had loved, and it, for various reasons I won't go into, it hadn't quite worked out. And I wanted to Thank you.
Jenny's holding her heart.
We're both holding our heart.
Oh, see, and what I wanted to, what I wanted to was to have the suggestion that early on in Flory's life, something happened that in itself is a mystery. So whilst on one hand she's trying to solve the contemporary mystery in the care home, we as the reader are wanting to try and find out too what it was that happened to her in her teens and how that has impacted her life since. And really only by Flory addressing that mystery in her backstory can she solve the present day crime.
Yes. Yes.
So that's my summary.
Dot, dot, dot. Lovely. Dot, dot, dot. Well done. Brilliant. You're not out of practice at all.
I know. I feel slightly intimidated now.
What you both did, or rather your publishers did, I suppose, but what you what I received from both of you when I heard about these books was a sort of personal letter to the reader as well, which is a really lovely thing. I love it when on top of just a little précis about the book and some amazing quotes, which you both have, there's also an actual, oh, by the way, hello, I'm the author and here's a little thing. Yeah. And you both have that. And it was really, it's really great because then going into the book, you sort of are, you're aware of where it's come from.
Yeah.
I think. And your book, Jenny, is 3 and a bit years in the making, right? This was 2020, as I mentioned, and it's out today.
Yes.
How are you feeling?
So I keep saying to everybody, I'm this curious mix of really excited and absolutely terrified.
Yeah.
It's just, it's insane. That's the only way I can describe it. I've had the most amazing experience in the lead up to launch, but it's full on now.
Oh, it's on.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be some people listening who've read this book already because we're recording on Pub Day, but actually by the time this episode goes out, it's probably been out a few weeks. There'll have been people who've devoured this book. And there'll be people listening and go, oh, I've heard about that book. I'm thinking about maybe. So for those people, perhaps you could set up the story and the inspirations behind it for us.
Absolutely. And as you were talking, Susan, so eloquently about yours, I was thinking, gosh, that's so interesting because there are similarities in our books.
There are.
In that Flory is 87, but Miv, who is the protagonist of my book, is only 12. But yet, both of them are trying to solve a mystery in the present that requires them to look at their whole lives in context.
Absolutely.
And that's absolutely Miv. So she's in 1970s West Yorkshire. And her home life, it just isn't the best. Money is tight. Her mum is ill in a way that she can't understand or fully grasp. Margaret Thatcher's just become Prime Minister. And there's an undercurrent of fear in the community, which is caused by the murders that have been taking place across Yorkshire since 1975. And Miv's dad, Austin, troubled by all of this, decides that he's going to move the family down south. And down south is a fate worse than death slash hell. All northerners are nodding right now. I just know any northerners listening
and
are nodding. Yes. And so Miv decides that she needs to make Yorkshire safe again. And to do so, she's going to solve the murders with her best friend, Sharon. And the two of them make a list of all the things that they see in their community that are suspicious. And they investigate them one by one. But in really similar ways to Flory, that journey of discovery to solving a crime actually becomes a journey of self-discovery for the two girls.
I do think I touched on it briefly when we're having our coffee outside. But one of the things that I really enjoy reading about, and we've both written about it, is the importance and loveliness of a good, strong female friendship.
Yes!
And the love of friends. And I think the love of friends doesn't get the airtime that romantic love has.
Yes.
So where are all the love songs about friendships? You know, where is the art about friendships? It's out there, but it's not nearly to the extent that I feel it should be. And one of the things I adored about Jenny's book was the friendship between Miv and Sharon. And I won't say too much about it other than the fact it is superbly done. Mm. They're both so well drawn.
Snap. And this is just going to turn into a love-in. You know that.
It is. I'm going to have to wait there. But you're so right, though. And actually, on this very podcast a couple of series ago, we were having a conversation about that sort of that relationship, that sort of friendship relationship that doesn't, as you say, get maybe as much airtime as romantic love. And yet, often in people's lives, it's a longer relationship because friendships are born out of being younger or young.
Yeah.
And they can often stay. And obviously, the romantic love doesn't come till maybe later in life. And it's funny that we don't have as much of that on the page or on the screen.
And it's so essential. It can be, you know, the friends we have, the really good friends, they are there through thick and thin.
Mm. Yes.
You know, and romantic relationships aren't necessarily.
Yeah. Yes.
So, I do feel that there should be more done to celebrate just the gorgeousness of a strong friendship and the importance of it.
What drew you, if indeed there was a draw, to the sort of mystery whodunit? Because there's both, as you've alluded to, on top of a story about these amazing characters and life, there's a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think we discussed before, Jenny, that your book's been described as this and that and the other and many, like a million different things,
yes.
right? In terms of sort of categorising it or as a genre. But there is a sort of mystery at the heart of both of these. So what drew you? You go first. Is there something, did you know that's what you wanted to write, or did that come after you'd sort of come up with the character?
I knew that I wanted to write a mystery. Mm. Flory was the first thing to sort of come into the room because of my response to how COVID was being dealt with and the COVID deaths. And I knew I wanted somebody who was going to be good company. But of course, then you have to have her doing something. You can't just write 110,000 words about
it.
I mean, as much as I'd love it. So I think, right, what's she going to do?
And I'd read it, probably.
And I wanted this idea too, that if you do have an 87-year-old, and if one of the big themes in the book is, it's never too late to have the best adventure of your life, it's never too late to fall in love, then I thought, well, what better way to show her kind of coming back to life, if you like, than to have her try and solve a mystery, particularly when it involves a much younger woman and involves younger people too. So I knew I wanted that, and I knew I needed that, because I also just thought, this is her.
Yeah.
It is celebrating a human life in all its, you know, ups and downs and all its complexities. So this sort of the undercurrent, I mean, I kind of think of the book a bit like a cake. I've talked about bicycles against trees. I'm not going to talk about cakes in the contemporary.
I'm writing all these down.
This is amazing. Brilliant.
Oh no, metaphors everywhere. So the sort of the care home mystery is the icing, but this big fruity sponge underneath it is Flora's life and all the ingredients that have gone into making her who she is. And without all those ingredients, she couldn't solve what's going on in her life now.
And I think it's a celebration of older age as well, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so glad to read, we've talked about the friendship story, central to the story. I'm so glad to read an older character.
Oh, I'm glad.
Because we don't see them as much as we should.
We shouldn't. Yeah. And why shouldn't, as we get older, okay, it might be that we've got more forehead wrinkles and we need hearing aids and we can't jump off a wall anymore. All of those things apply to me. but just because that's where we are doesn't mean we're not about to have the best adventure. Doesn't mean that we can't 100%. Still learn things, meet new people, go to new places, fall in love. I mean, there's no limit to those things. Yeah. There's no suddenly, oh, no, you're 80, you can't have these anymore. So I did want to just pour this into Flory and Stanhope, who she becomes friends with during her time in the care home, because this idea that it's never too late and the best is yet to come is actually something that sustained me during lockdown.
Yeah.
I had to think there is going to be a life beyond this, and let's hope it's better than the life before. Even though the life before was great, let's hope the best is still to come.
Totally. And that message comes through the pages, and I felt very good about it.
Like, yeah.
I've got another 47 years of, you know, adventures to come now. It's like,
so hopeful. Yeah.
Thank you.
With your book, Jenny, going back to the whodunit mystery side, am I right in thinking that you actually wrote or started writing like a book that you were just like, my heart's not in it?
Yes.
You put it away.
Correct.
Never saw the light of day. And then this book came from it.
That's absolutely right. And I do read a lot of crime and a lot of thrillers. That's kind of my go-to genre to read.
Yeah.
And I thought I was writing a crime book when I was writing The List of Suspicious Things. And it turned out sort of not to be, although it's still sometimes described as crime, as you've alluded to. but I love reading a good mystery myself. And when I started writing, I thought, well, surely I should write what I read. Mm. And at the time, psychological thrillers were all the rage. Very fashionable. So I decided I'd try my hand at that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the words were in the right order. And I had a plot. But it was so dull. And I still don't know how I knew that, but I did know. Yeah. I read it and I thought, gosh, this has no air in it. Oh. It's got no life. Yeah. No breath.
You needed the sponge, the cake sponge.
Absolutely. We're going to move metaphors.
You can have my cake metaphor.
Backwards
and forwards.
And so, yeah, it's in a drawer, Joe. No one is ever going to read it.
But that's okay, isn't it? Because then you sort of knew that and yeah. you went, actually, no.
And it yeah. led you to this one.
It led you to this.
That's all the false starts we have as writers yeah. and all the things that go into a drawer, never to see the light of day, lead us to this
point. I could not agree with you more. And I, you know, this was my first go at writing. And to be able to see, oh, no, that's terrible. Mm. This needs something different. I need to write mm-hmm. about something different. I need to care deeply about yeah. the people that are in my book. Without that revelation, I wouldn't have got to yeah. where we have got to.
I think that's really important for writers in general, or aspiring writers, or people yeah. who are writing that. It's like every author, I'm almost certain every published author has got one or two or mm. three or five mm-hmm. books in a drawer. Mm-hmm. And they, you're absolutely right, Susan, they are the stepping stones to getting to the book that yeah. actually needs to get out in the world.
And it can feel such, I think it's such a brave thing to get to the point where you go, I might have spent 8 months on this.
Yeah. Yes. No, but...
But I have to say goodbye to yeah. it because it's not working. Yeah. I mean, what a yeah. huge thing to have to do. And yet to be able to go, it's not wasted. That 8 months is the springboard into...
Completely that.
Yeah. And so thank goodness that you did make the decision you did, or we wouldn't have your amazing book.
Mm. Thank you so much. Back to the loving.
Back to loving. We're back, ladies and gents. I love that you, Jenny, created a sort of method 70s writing room.
Yes.
Obviously, this book is set in the 70s, West Yorkshire, and you had, I think, pictures of like old cars. You listened to exclusively 70s
yeah,
music.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that right?
Wow. Absolutely right. So I wrote List of Suspicious Things in lockdown 2. Mm-hmm. So I had far too much time on my hands to go all in. And I write in a very airy, brightly coloured room in my house, and it just wasn't the right vibe. So I basically cut out, printed, got old newspaper cuttings and articles, and I just wallpapered the entire room with like
this.
Brown corduroy, a couple of kind of green nasty cortinas.
Were you wearing flares?
All the way. I mean, I should have had a sort of patchouli oil in the background or something. I don't know. I don't know what is a 70s smell. Maybe it's high karate or... Brute. I don't know. But anyway,
Old Spice.
That would be good. So I just basically covered the walls of this once brightly coloured room with brown, green, orange, and swirls. I even got like the carpets patterns and the curtain patterns. And
this is method acting.
I know.
It really is.
Amazing.
Method
really
writing. Is far yeah. too much time on my hands. And I would only listen to, I didn't listen to music while I was writing, but during that time I only listened to music from the time, because if there's anything that evokes an era,
music.
It's the songs, and the Carpenters and John Denver, for me, is the 70s.
Yeah.
And Elton John, who plays a big role in the
he
book.
Does.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
But I got excited at things like, you mentioned the Dukes of Hazzard, and I was like, yes, I remember those. And there's one of your characters enjoys a good rollerball lip gloss, which I'm sure, Joe, you're nodding at me. But I remember going, oh, I had those. Mm. I had those. What happened to those?
So I was obsessed with rollerball lip glosses and couldn't, you know, I did not come from a family that bought rollerball lip glosses for their children. And so I think I gave my characters all the things I aspired to have, rollerball lip glosses being one of them.
What you want when you're 12 years old, isn't it?
Yeah, Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that you aren't quite as method in your writing as perhaps Jenny has gone from your reaction there, Susan.
No, I haven't gone to those lengths, but every book has been different and I've treated every book differently. And
yes.
My third book way back when was set in the Highlands and I wrote virtually all of it outdoors. So
interesting.
I sort of took a notebook and a thermos flask and put on my anorak and I went and just sat on a hill for 8 hours. Oh, yeah. I would just write outside.
Wow, that's even more method.
So, yeah, possibly, actually, with hindsight.
That's quite cool, though, as well, isn't
it? Yeah.
So I loved it. And it felt, and it was very much, that book was very much about being outdoors. It was the point of view of, it was historical, it was 1692, it was the point of view of a woman who was accused of witchcraft. So it was all very... It suited me writing it outdoors. This book, I mean, because I couldn't go anywhere, it had to be written indoors. But in a way, that helped it too, because one of the things about Florrie, I've talked about it, you know, her life, and one of the things that we find out about her is that she travels a lot. And of course, during lockdown, I couldn't travel a lot. So I went back to some of the travel diaries when I had sort of backpacking in my early 20s, when I was yet to really understand myself and was trying to be a writer, and they're excruciating to go into now. But I was like, right, okay, so what did I see when I went backpacking? And so I could take out things that I had seen and done and put that into this book. So actually, in many ways, even though I'm not an 87-year-old with one leg, there is more of me in this book than I think there's been in any other, because I had no choice but to really turn in on myself and look at my life and my experiences and pass them on to Florrie.
Are you, I know you cringed probably, but are you glad you kept those?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, I suppose this is the sign that I always wanted to write, in that that it was when I went somewhere other than home that I would start to put pen to paper. Mm. I remember when I first really started to write, I was 11, and I went to Wales for a week on holiday to a farm. And I loved it. Mm. And bearing in mind, I sort of come from 8 miles south of Birmingham, this incredible Welsh landscape. And I didn't want to leave and I took photographs. But I remember thinking, but photographs can't take back the sound of the ditches with water running in them. And photos can't bring back the smell of the barn. Mm. So I wrote it down. I remember their sheepdogs were kept in cages. And if I put my hand against the cage, they'd come and lick my palm through the cage. And I could feel their grainy tongues. That a photo is not going to do that. So I wrote it all down. And this, and I'll talk about it maybe in the book off shortly, but the sense of place.
Yes.
And to write when you're not at home, to write what you see when you're travelling and elsewhere means you can then take what you've seen and heard and smelt and bring it home with you. And I love that in fiction. I love reading books that do that.
Yeah.
Yes, me too.
Yeah. Mm. Me and you. Me too. Me too.
Me too.
All of us. All of us.
I weirdly have to go somewhere to write. If I'm going to write, I can't do the room at home, Jenny, even if I decorated it.
Really? Are you like a coffee shop guy? Or
But I'm even more ridiculously annoying than that, in that I'm just like, need to go away.
It's
really annoying.
That makes writing very expensive.
Stupidly. I mean, I'm not saying I have to, but like, it's almost like, I did write on my balcony in lockdown, but there was something about, I couldn't write in the flat though.
Mm.
So I was living in London at the time and would go out on the balcony and that's where I'd write.
That's
and I'd
really have to be curious.
Similarly now, I don't live there, I live by the sea. I have to be out. And it just made me think of it, hearing you talk about the Highlands book and being outside. I have to go and do. It's really, I don't know if there's a separation thing or something.
I do feel, I remember feeling when I was writing outside, I couldn't be got at. There was no ping of emails and nobody could, well, I suppose people can phone you wherever you are, but the sense of being away from the desk, there was a freedom to it and I could relax a bit more. Whether that applies to you, I don't know.
That could be it. Maybe. That's it.
And there's always something to do in the home, isn't there? There's always something to do. So I do. I mean, I actually do get it.
Yeah, but it sounds very extravagant. I'm not saying I go to Mauritius and put a few pages down.
I tell you what. That's what I like to think now.
Yeah.
But, no, a caravan in Donegal. Thank you very much, Hannah and her parents, for lending me that, by the way, for a week.
Brilliant.
It was brilliant. It's just interesting, isn't it? Like, hearing that going outside thing is...
Yeah.
It's
and how cool. Every single book is created in a different way.
Yep.
With a different process. I love all of that.
Yeah.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We're going to do the book off very shortly, but before that, I always like to ask my guests what they've been reading and enjoying recently. Now, you, Jenny, are a part-time bookseller as well as an author, aren't you? So,
yeah.
And that makes it both... better and worse for you to answer this question in that you've got access to a lot of things and you probably read a lot. But if you're anything like me, the moment you get asked that question, your mind goes blank. You literally can't remember the name of any author or a book. So, Jenny, what have you been reading and enjoying recently?
You're not going to get me on that because I'm going to cheat and have two.
You can have as many as you want.
The first one is Night Watching by Tracy Sierra, which was out, I think, the beginning of February. It is the best thriller I have read in years, and I mean years. So I live in the middle of nowhere in a house on a hill, which can be quite creaky. And I've lived there for 5 years. I live on my own, and I have never had a sleepless night. I read Night Watching and I had three sleepless nights to the extent that I was like, I've got to get up. I've got to put lights on. I've got to have music on. Genuinely, I do not know how this woman has done it, but it is a masterclass in absolute tension. I recommend it to everybody, but I also say it comes with a warning.
Yes, yes.
It sounds like it does.
It's not graphic in any way, shape or form. There is no blood in it. Honestly, it's absolutely amazing. And I've made contact with Tracy on social media and we've become debut buddies because...
So it's a debut as well,
is
it?
It is a debut because I could not believe how incredible this book is. So I highly, highly... I recommend it to everybody. Because it terrified the life out of me.
That's Night Watching by Tracy
Sierra.
Sierra.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
And then the other book is actually one that isn't out yet, but I'm absolutely... I would put a lot of money on the fact that Joe will love it, but I know Susan will love it too. Mm-hmm. And she's shortly about to meet the author of it,
yes.
Which is Samuel Burr, The Fellowship of Puzzle Makers, which is another book which celebrates older people.
It sounds fabulous.
It's also about friendship and community, but it's very much about identity and belonging. And it's a beautiful, very imaginative and clever book. From everything I know about both of you, you're both going to love it.
Oh, wow.
Well,
that's exciting,
brilliant.
Isn't it?
It's the top of my
TV. Can you tell I'm a bookseller?
Yes, actually. It's come across quite well. The Fellowship of Puzzle Makers.
Yeah. I mean, even the title is fabulous, right?
You wanted to pick that off the shelf, didn't you?
Oh, two great recommendations.
Thank you.
What about you, Susan? What have you been reading and enjoying? They don't have to be new. It's just what you've been sort of reading recently.
Well, the one I'm reading at the moment, I'm only about a quarter of the way through it, so it feels on one hand a gamble to recommend it. Yeah. But I also know that I'm going to continue to love it as much as I am now. I just know. It's Cuddy by Benjamin Myers. It's just come out in paperback. I clocked it when it came out in hardback last year. It's about St. Cuthbert. Cuddy is or was an affectionate nickname for him. And he was, well, I think he's regarded as the patron saint of Northumberland. And this book feels first and foremost actually to be a love letter to Northumberland, which suits me down to the ground because I lived in Northumberland for quite a while. And it's incredibly close to my heart as a county. And the northeast is just this incredible region. So I knew that was going to appeal. And St. Cuthbert himself, he was venerated for his compassion, for his affinity to nature and landscape. And he had a huge following, very loyal following after his death. The one thing that worried me in the beginning was it's quite an experimental book in terms of structure. There is poetry, there's prose, there are pages of quotes from non-fiction books to support this book. Even things like the font changes, and I've just read one page and the font gets smaller and smaller and smaller as it goes down the page. So you feel like you're having your eyes tested. You're like, hang on, what's this bit at the bottom? And this is the kind of thing that I can find a bit intimidating. Imposter syndrome comes in as a reader and I think, is this book going to be too clever for me? That's how I feel. Right. Am I going to find it really hard to manage it? But it's kudos to Benjamin Myers, and it shows what a phenomenal writer he is, that it is in no way inaccessible. Yeah. I can go into this experimental book and feel comfortable there and enjoy it. And it's gentle and it's beautiful and it's musical in places. So I am really enjoying it. And I'm really, I knew I was going to pick it up at some point. But I really, I'm thoroughly enjoying it at the moment. And I just want to give a shout out too to Anne Patchett, who I'd never read until 2 weeks ago. I can't believe
I haven't read the new one.
No, but it's how wonderful that having just discovered her, I've got all her books to read.
So much fun.
Oh, it was State of Wonder that I read, and a bit like the night watching that you mentioned. Yeah. I was up till 3 a.m. reading this extraordinary book. So I'm really pleased to have finally started to read her, and I have all her books to come.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'll echo what Jenny said because she's absolutely wonderful. Tom Lake is the new one I'm referring to, and I adored it.
I honestly could not put it down.
I adored it.
Just phenomenal work.
Oh, I'm so
and
excited.
And Meryl Streep narrates the audiobook. I have listened and it is perfection in an audiobook. Honestly.
Imagine getting Meryl Streep.
Getting Meryl Streep. I know. But it is the marriage of the two.
Yeah.
Is perfection. Seriously.
I'm so excited to have found
Can I put a recommendation in for Bel Canto as well?
Yes, Bel Canto and Commonwealth and all
of them. All of them. You will a lot. You know. And I love that you brought Benjamin Myers, who I love as a writer. I think he's absolutely fabulous.
Oh, he's brilliant, isn't he? Gallows Pole's
I haven't
tremendous.
Read Cuddy. Haven't read this one, so that must. But that's the newer one.
I think it came out last month in paperback.
Oh, yes.
It feels really new. And can I just shout out to Cogito Books in Hexham and Hilary, who recommended it to me.
Thank you, Hilary.
Thank you, Hilary.
All the booksellers, all hail booksellers.
All the hail the bookseller. My goodness.
And The Offing is another Benjamin Myers title is. Wonderful, as is the perfect golden circle, I think. Which, anyway, there we go. We could carry on, couldn't we? We'll just keep throwing all the names out.
I could honestly sit here all afternoon just throwing out book titles.
And this is lovely.
Yeah.
I feel we could be here. We could be here well into the evening if we didn't have a book launch to go to.
Oh, yes, there is that. There is that little issue, isn't there? There's also the issue of the book off, which we now have to turn to. As I mentioned, this is where each of you gets 3 minutes uninterrupted to tell us about a book that you love, that you think me and our listeners should read and why. Now, you don't have to use the full 3 minutes. I will say that because as we've established over many series and years and also before we started recording this podcast, some people think 3 minutes is a long time and some people think 3 minutes is a really short time. And I'm going to not say who thought it was a long time and who thinks it's a short time. But what I am going to do is work out who gets to choose whether they go first or second. And the way we do that is it's whoever's travelled the furthest gets to pick.
Now, is that travelled the furthest today or travelled the furthest? Oh, okay. That's slightly different then. I'm flexing my eye travelled far
muscle. Because I think you might pick
this? You might
this?
Win.
Yeah, because I am Somerset, Devon border.
Warwickshire. Ooh, I don't know. I'm very happy for you to.
God, it's. I mean, I probably should have asked in advance and then done the maths, but.
I was just about.
Did you come on the train?
I did come on the train.
How long?
I was going to say, is that a better
way
of testing
in terms
it?
Of. The train is 2 hours, but it's quite a short, as in, not a short, it's an express train.
That's long. Mine's about 1 hour 45.
Right.
Okay.
You win.
Yeah.
Okay. And
does that mean I go first?
No, that means you get to choose if you
want to
go first.
Oh, I do win then. I'm going to go first, definitely.
Very good. Yes. Okay. And that means then, Susan, you get to choose which instrument.
Ooh. I feel the snake's knee the winner.
which instrument you want at your 3 minute mark. So if you're still talking at three, you'll
which
either
be
rung out by the bell or you'll be honked out by the horn.
Oh, I'd like the honky horn.
You're going to have the honky horn.
Thank you very much.
That means you're going to have the school bell.
Okay, school bell. Okay. That seems appropriate.
Now, before I put 3 minutes on the clock, just tell us the book that you're putting forward, please.
I am putting forward the legendary Rachel's Holiday by Marion Keyes. Come on.
Super.
I can see both your faces.
Well, I missed it. I'll stand down.
Should we just call it?
Yeah. Seriously, come on.
Do you know why I smiled so much there? Because
tell me.
I'm about to do this is the clang moment here. This is because I'm about to say, oh, Marion Keyes, former guest of this podcast.
Ooh la la.
Oh, that makes me.
Has she sat we on this sofa?
She sat there.
Oh my gosh, I am sat in the seat that Marion sat in. You have no idea. I am like a super fan. It's almost quite scary. I think
kind of
if she saw me
sitting.
Coming, she'd run. Seriously.
Oh no, you're the right side of super fan. Not crossed over into the scary.
Yeah, I hope
yet.
So.
Well, yes, you've already convinced two people on
brilliant.
The bench, and one of them is you know going up against you that Marion should win most things in life. But anyway, mm-hmm. we've put 3 minutes on the clock, so it's over to you to tell us about Rachel's Holiday.
Brilliant. So, Rachel's Holiday is the story of 20-something Rachel Walsh, who finds herself, as a result of a family intervention, brought back from New York to rehab in Ireland. And the rehab is called the Cloisters. Now, she insists that she's not an addict, but she decides that she needs a rest anyway and a nice little holiday. Hence the title. And in the hope of meeting some celebrities and having a nice spa break, she agrees to go to the Cloisters. And the book is the story of her time in rehab, plus recollections of the events that landed her there. Now, it was out in 1997, but it has stood the test of time. It is funny, and yet it has absolute depth. It has heart. It is one of the best pieces of fictional writing about addiction I have ever read, and I've read a lot. It's about love, it's about families, and it's about characters you feel that you know, so you root for them so fully. It's like they are your best friend or your own family. Now, I read it when it first came out in 1997. And at that point, I was in denial about my own relationship with alcohol. I've been now sober for 16 years. But at the time, I wasn't sober. And this book pierced my own denial with its deeply insightful portrayal of a woman really struggling to understand her relation to substances. And it's one of the things that I credit with beginning my own journey to sobriety. And I think the thing about Marion Keyes' books is they're sometimes, or were, not so much now, but they were marketed in a quite fluffy way. And as though they were lighter than they actually are. Mm. And yet this book actually changed my life. And I'll always be grateful to Marion for writing it.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness. 30 seconds to go still, Jenny, but that was powerful and yes. wonderful.
How do I follow that?
You can follow it. You can follow it.
She can so follow it.
I mean,
that's. I mean, what a recommendation.
We'll come back and talk about it properly in a bit more detail. Mm. But you can take a breath. You can relax
Ooh,
now.
Yeah.
What a great pitch. Yeah, we love Marion.
We love her.
And you're absolutely right about the sort of fluffy. Fluffy marketing, but we'll come back to
that. In the past.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm putting 3 minutes back on the clock now for you, Susan. It's there if you,
just
you need to glance
down.
At it, but I'm going to probably cover it just to throw you off.
No.
Just before we start, tell us the book you're putting forward, please.
It is The Poisonwood Bible by Barbara Kingsolver.
Oh,
she brings out the big guns.
Oh, my.
Well, how could you do that?
When I put this forward, I was thinking, someone's going to have done it before. Joe's not going to let me do it. So I was amazed that nobody had.
I'm actually quite cross.
Well, we don't have a hard and fast rule about... I don't think anyone has. I will say that.
Okay.
I did think back. I don't think anyone has actually done the Poisonwood Bible. I think maybe someone's done Barbara before, not this book. Mm-hmm. Incidentally, Demonhead Copperfield, by the way.
Right, yeah.
Right, wonderful.
Yeah.
This another one I'm going to throw in the mix. Another one of talking about what we've read and enjoyed.
She's
recently.
Just a phenomenal writer.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
But no, I don't think anyone's done this book. But there isn't a hard and fast rule to say that someone can't do one that's gone before, because everyone has a different take on it.
Sure.
So actually, it's fine. But
jolly good.
No, I think you're the first.
Okay.
And my goodness, what a choice.
Yes.
Ooh. So much to say. So much to say.
Well, you've got 3 minutes to do so. So
you over can have to my you. 30 seconds yeah. that I didn't use.
That's over to you to tell us about the Poisonwood Bible then.
I probably need 3 days. But anyway, so I remember when I first read this, honestly, it felt like I'd been struck by lightning. I couldn't believe how good this book was. And I have so much to say about it, and I know I haven't got time to do so. So I will probably just pick two things that I particularly love about it. But before that, quick summary. It's set in 1959. Nathan Price is a fiery evangelical Baptist preacher from Mississippi who goes to what was then the Belgian Congo to be a missionary, and he takes with him his wife, Orleana, and their 4 daughters. This book, at no point does Nathan Price have a voice. Even though he is speaking on behalf of the family by taking them to the Congo, he does not narrate the book. It is all about the women, which is fantastic. The vast majority of the book is told by the 4 daughters. The chapters alternate. They all get to speak in turn. And that's the first thing I adore about this book, is the characterisation. The way it's been structured and the way these girls all get to share their stories. They are so different. I mean, 3 of these girls are teenagers and 1 is 5 years old. But the 3 teenagers so close in age, and yet they're so distinctive, they're so different, they're humorous, they're witty, they're sharp as a tack, they see what's going on, they all have different relationships to what happens in the Congo and the people there. And I'm just in awe of the fact that Barbara Kingsolver has managed to create such phenomenal characters, and you love them as soon as you meet them. The mother, Orleana, she also has a few chapters, but not many, and hers are different because whereas those 4 daughters are telling us about the Congo whilst they're in the Congo, Orleana is looking back retrospectively. She has the benefit of hindsight, and her chapters are quieter, they're elegiac, they're sad. And one of the things she says very early on, so it's not a plot spoiler, is she says that looking back at the Congo, she's had to leave one of her 4 daughters in its dank red earth. So I think that's superb by Barbara Kingsolver, in that you, just as you get to love these 4 girls, you're told that one of them's not going to be there at the end of the book. And that is this wonderful hook to keep reading. And you do not want any of them to go, but of course one does. The second thing I really love about it is sense of place, which I mentioned earlier. I am in the Congo with this book. Every time I dip back into it, I can smell the goat meat cooking. I can taste it. I can see the ants on the wall. I can hear the insects at night. It's airless. It's stifling. I can hear the music. It is the most transported book I think I've ever known. And to prove a point, I remember the first time I read it, I was in Stratford-upon-Avon, where I live. I was walking down the Evesham Road to get a pint of milk from Tesco. And let me assure you, the Evesham Road in Stratford is not like the Belgian Congo. And yet, any time I walked under the trees, I'd glance up to check there wasn't a green mamba in them. And I thought, that's a sign of a phenomenal writer who makes somebody think that even though they're in Warwickshire, that they think that they're not. I'm having a look. I'm out of time. But those are the 2 things I love most about about it.
Wow. You were right. You had loads. I could just tell you if you had another
you
10 minutes,
kept going.
20
I
minutes.
I could have kept going. Yep.
But well done. You clocked the time very well. And you got quite a lot of way, I'd say, in the 3 minutes. So well done.
Thank you. Done. I'm good at talking.
And what a great pitch. What a great choice. Two amazing books to talk about. Let's go back to Marion. Firstly, amazing that it had such a personal effect on you.
Yeah. Huge.
And what a wonderful thing to hear. And congratulations on 16 years. And
absolutely.
Just what a brilliant thing to hear.
Yeah, and part of the magic of Rachel's Holiday is I went on a really similar journey to Rachel throughout the book, in that when the book starts, Rachel is convinced everyone is making a real fuss of her relationship with substances and that she is not an addict and she's just basically pandering to them. And I remember reading the book at the time with a very troubled relationship with substances and thinking, yeah, Rachel, these people are a nightmare. And I genuinely felt really sorry for poor Rachel. And it was only, she does it so cleverly, Rachel's dawning realization of her addiction. I had a similar uncomfortable, creeping sensation of, oh, I might be in trouble too. And the same year, Drinking a Love Story by Caroline Knapp came out, which is a non-fiction book about alcoholism. And the two things combined were basically a bit of a punch in the face for me and led to me getting sober. But what's magical to me about Marianne is she did it with a lightness of touch that I don't think anyone has ever replicated. While you were talking and I was thinking, oh shit, she's brought out Barbara Kingsolver. I did remember something that I didn't say, which I think for me clinches Rachel's Holiday. It has the hottest man.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Come on.
The Poisonwood Bible does not have any of those.
No.
And Luke in Rachel's Holiday, whoever you are and whatever your preference is, I defy you not to find him devastatingly attractive.
Yeah, that is fair, I think.
Come on.
I remember reading, I think it was Watermelon.
Done deal.
Yes.
Back in the early noughties or something, there was a character called Joe Roth, and I didn't have and I really fancied Joe Roth, I think. do you know who I mean?
She writes
really good men.
She writes
I remember
really
that name.
Good men.
Maybe it was because it was Joe.
That's incredible. Joe, yes.
Yeah.
I remember
then thinking, oh, he's a bit steamy.
With you all the way.
But I just love the personal touch to the story and the pitch. I think you're absolutely right that it still stands up. I mean, 27 years later. And this sort of fluffy marketing that happened over the first part of her career, which is now gone, absolutely.
Yep. Yes. Yep.
She's amazing.
She's incredible. She's a storyteller.
Yeah, yeah. And her characters, as you say, are also fab.
And can I just say,
you may,
that she's one of the people that gave me the courage to write, because I went to see her just before I started writing the book. I went to see her at the launch of Grown Up.
Yes.
And somebody in the audience asked a question about what qualification do you need to write a book? And Marion basically said, look, if you are a voracious reader, you learn to write by osmosis. Mm. And I was sat in the audience going, I'm a voracious reader. Mm. Why am I not putting pen to paper? And that was just before lockdown started.
Wonderful.
And she gave me the courage to start.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Just all hail Marion.
All basically. Hail Marion, not in a creepy stalking
way. No, not in a creepy stalking way. She's actually fine. Don't worry, Marion. Yeah. It's fine. And all hail Barbara. I mean, my
all
goodness.
Hail Barbara.
So if you're going to put a book up against Rachel's Holiday, you bring the Poisonwood
Bible. You do. Right? You bring the big guns.
Although, you know, there is no... unless you like Fiery Baptist preachers.
Yes. There's no hot man as such, necessarily. But there are, as you've said in your brilliant pitch, amazing characters.
Astonishing characters, yeah.
The way she does the... I hadn't thought about it until you said she makes you fall in love with the daughters and then tells you only three. There'll only be three.
And one of the things, if 3 minutes had been 4 minutes, that I would have thrown into, was that I'm obviously not going to say which of the daughters dies, and I'm not going to say how she dies, other than to say it involves an animal. But I remember reading that death scene, and it is so quietly done, if I can say that. And it was, I felt like I was watching it in slow motion, and it's heartbreaking. I wanted to reach into the page and stop it from happening, and of course you can't. Yeah. And I don't think I've ever wanted to embrace a character more than that girl when her time has come. And of course it's a pivotal moment in everybody's story, because people lose a sister, people lose a daughter. To write a death scene must, I'm trying to think if I have ever tried to, but it must be incredibly hard. And to have something that's, this violent and awful way to go, when it's not beautiful, that's the wrong way to describe it, but it's the lightness of touch, the gentleness of it, there's not an extra word anywhere. It is so tightly done. It really stayed with me. I remember howling.
Oh, yes. God.
Yeah.
And stayed with you to the point of looking up at the trees. I mean, that is...
Yes.
That's, as you said, a sign of an incredible book and writer, if you're actually doing this in real life.
Exactly. And it is... I mean, like I said, I love feeling like I've been taken somewhere else when I read a book.
Yes.
Whether it's, 1979 in Yorkshire, or whether it's what was the Belgian Congo, to feel like I've spent time in another landscape.
Yeah.
I love that as a reader. And I can't think of another book that's probably done that more for me than this one.
Do you go back to it?
Yes. I mean, I've read it double figures. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So you really have. It's because there are these recurring reads, aren't there? A lot of the books that do get pitched as a book of choice are books that the author has gone to again and again and again, not necessarily just read and loved once, which is obviously totally fine. But we find actually...
Yeah.
It's a reread.
Yeah.
It's something that maybe inspires, or that just, I think in the case of Haunting of Hill House, which was one of the books that's been pitched before, and actually made me think of your house when you were describing it, creaky old house out on its own. The author, whose name I now forget who pitched it, but I will remember, said they have to read it every year. It's almost like a thing. They just have to read Shirley Jackson every year, you know.
That's Me and Persuasion. But I've also done the same with Rachel's Holiday. But Me and Persuasion.
Every year.
Yeah.
It's just a thing. It's a comfort. It's a... Yeah.
They're friends, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's sort of...
Exactly that.
And I think
with brilliant books and writing, you get something out of them every time.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the key to these books that we reread, like Rachel's Holiday, like The Poisonwood Bible. Every time, you know what's happening, but you'll get something else.
Yes. And I always, these four daughters, I can never work out who my favourite is. It seems to change every time.
Changes every time. Yeah. Depends where you are in life.
Exactly. Depends where you are and what you need, what you're taking from the book at that point.
Yeah.
So, both of them.
It's made me want to read it again, actually. It's made me want to, because
I
don't think I've read it more than once. I think I read it and that's it. But so you've actually inspired me to read it again.
I still win, though, right?
And with Rachel's Holiday, that I have read more than once. And as you know, I love Marion, it's impossible to call, really. Two incredible books.
Can we have a dead
two
heat?
Brilliant pictures. I can't start the series off on a dead heat because I do it all the time.
Yeah.
I literally do it all the time and I get told off.
That's
they're like,
true.
Well, what are you doing, mate? And I go, right. But I mean, it's sort of a dead heat, but it is it's a dead heat, but it's not because I'm going to go. Rachel's Holiday.
Woohoo!
I'm going to go with Rachel's Holiday just partly because of the personal,
absolutely,
thank you.
Story that comes with it, I think, pipped.
I absolutely concur.
Thank you,
and I'm going to read it again now as well.
Yeah, and because we all love Marion.
Yeah, we all love Marion. And she's got amazing hair.
And she's got amazing hair, and she writes really hot men.
Yeah, come on.
Thank you both for those wonderful pictures, for those brilliant books. They're all very worthy. And here's two more brilliant books for you: The List of Suspicious Things, which is by Jenny Gilfrey, and it's out now, published by Hutchinson Heinlein. Chinaman and The Night in Question by Susan Fletcher. That's published by Bantam and it's out on the 18th of April. Available to pre-order now, I believe.
Yes, it is.
So all you have to do is type it in and click pre-order and it'll arrive on the 18th of April. And it's well worth it. Thank you both for being here. Thank you for your time, for your recommendations. And
thank you.
Yeah, let's all join the Marion fan club, eh?
Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you.
I've loved it. Thank you.
Hey, folks. I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.